This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Lead Singer Syndrome. I am your host, as always, Shane Told, and this podcast is all about me talking to other lead singers about what it's like to front a professional rock band. Today we have a great show. I speak to Tommy Rogers of Between the Buried and Me, also affectionately known as BT Bam, and I've actually known Tommy for a long time. I've known Tommy since, you know, before Between the Buried and Me ever had a record out. You know, back in the day, we played a show together locally in my hometown of Burlington, Ontario. And we've been in touch ever since. We've been friends, and we've played shows, and we've seen each other around. And it was actually cool. I hadn't talked to him in a while, and he hit me up, emailed me, and said, "Shane, love the podcast. Would you like to have me on?" And it's funny, we get into how he actually doesn't even like doing interviews. So very cool that he wanted to reach out to me and talk about so much stuff. I mean, he's got a family now. He's living in California. You know, he's originally from North Carolina. And it's just a great talk with an old friend who is just making some incredible music, not just under the Between the Buried and Me, BT Bam moniker, but also under Tommy Giles, which is his first and middle name. And that stuff is really cool, too. It's very different from Between the Buried and Me. But you should definitely check it out. As always, I want to thank you very much for checking out this podcast, whether it's the first time you've listened to it, whether you've listened to all, I don't know, 25, 26 episodes, whatever it is, I really, really am happy to have you here. Thank you. This podcast is not just me talking to you guys every Monday. I want this thing to be a back and forth discussion like I have with the guests. And I want you guys to feel free to email me, leadsingersyndrome@gmail.com. Hit me up on Twitter. It's at leadsingersyn, S-Y-N. We have Instagram, leadsingersyndrome. We have a Facebook page. Check that out. Facebook, up and coming. Up and coming in the podcast world, I'm telling you. So add us on all those things, and please get in touch. And if you do like the show, it really helps if you can write a review on iTunes, preferably 5 stars. That really, really helps the show grow, and you know, we can get bigger and bigger guests and bigger reach and all that stuff, and it's a win-win for everybody. Also, we're setting up the VIP program. I know I've said this for like probably over a month now. It is coming. Me and my producer, Nick, we're working out the details. Thank you so much for everybody that's provided feedback on the kinds of things they'd like to see. I think we're going to have a really, really cool program, which, you know, it's going to be great for the casual listener and also great for the more intense Lead Singer Syndrome fan. And I know there's many of you. So thank you very much for your patience. Well, we wait to get all that going. In the meantime, if you want to support the show, we have the Amazon referral link, and it's real simple. All you do is you go to leadsingersyndrome.com/Amazon. It takes you right to the Amazon homepage, and whatever you buy, from a diamond ring to a guitar to batteries to condoms, whatever it is, we get 4% of whatever you buy. And someone actually told me it might be 6% now. I don't know if that's true, but regardless, every little bit helps. So please, if you're going to buy anything off Amazon, leadsingersyndrome.com/Amazon takes you right there. Login is normal. You won't even know that it's different, but definitely we will know it's different. So thank you very much for that. Anyways, not too much other news. You know, I'm just hanging out at home, doing my thing. Weather's getting nice in Toronto, so that's feeling awesome. Yeah, man, it's been a pretty crazy month for me. But as always, I look forward to doing this podcast, recording this podcast every week, and bringing it to you guys. So thank you so much for the support. On with the show. Here's Tommy from Between the Buried and Me and our conversation on Lead Singer Syndrome.
Born, 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 born.
Dude, I'm in Toronto.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I live right downtown. Okay. Like right on the lake. Cool. So yeah, I'm into it, you know. It's nice, like the weather's finally getting better here.
Yeah.
But man, like we had a brutal winter.
Really? Yeah, we were just up in we didn't do Toronto. We went across like Winnipeg and
oh, lovely.
I'm trying to think. Yeah. Where you know Jay Cloth probably.
Jay Cloth, yeah. Well, I know Jay Cloth.
Yeah, we played in Guelph. We haven't played Guelph in years, and we played there this last tour.
That's crazy. I actually went to school in Guelph. Like I went to college there. There's a university there, and I actually own a house in Guelph, and I rent it out to students.
Oh, really?
So that's awesome. So I'm in Guelph all the time. I really like that city. Actually, like you know, it's a college town, but it's got this like hippie thing going on. Like I think they were. I could be way off, but I think they were the first city in Canada to like recycle.
Oh, really?
So yeah, so they have like a really cool, like kind of cutting edge, you know, like vibe, like a very progressive.
Yeah.
You know? So yeah, Guelph is man. I think Guelph is an underrated little town. So
yeah, it seemed I want to spend because I haven't been there in years. But yeah. it was so fucking cold the day we were there. I was just like, man,
I know, man.
Couldn't really get out.
That's right. Yeah. So you're talking about the and we're just gonna jump into this. This is cool.
Okay.
Because
cool.
You know sometimes like you start an interview and you don't know if it's actually like happening or not.
Yeah.
Like it's nice are we on the record
with somebody that does interviews and knows how it is?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's the thing. Like I mean, I've been doing this. I mean, I guess I've been doing this for 6 months now. This podcast. So
cool.
I'm starting to get better. Awesome. But yeah, like the first few I did.
Yeah.
You know, it's weird being on the other side of the microphone, you know, or whatever it is.
I bet. Yeah. I bet.
Yeah, man. So you guys were just out with August Burns Red.
Yep.
Co-headlining tour.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I want to ask you about co-headlining tours. Is that something that you've done a lot of or not really?
Not really, no. That was it was kind of nice because we flip-flopped every night. And
yep.
I don't know, the nights that you're not headlining, there's no pressure. I kind of enjoy those nights more than others.
Because
especially with a band, I don't know. I mean, we definitely share some fans, but I feel like we're so different from each other. That you always have that fear. I think both bands probably had that fear of walkouts, you know?
Of course,
That's the scary thing about the co-headlining thing. It's just because you never know if their fans are going to stick around or vice versa, you know?
Right, but the thing, I mean, we've done a few, you know, Silverstein, we've done a few co-headlining tours, and the biggest thing, like, problem I have is, like, there always seems to be some kind of, like, argument or some kind of issue that like arises, you know, like between the bands. Like if it's something, you know, it's usually something stupid. Like we had one band, I'm not going to name names, but we had like one band that was like pissed off one day that because they were closing the show, but their name wasn't on the marquee.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like sometimes like kind of petty arguments or, you know, if you're arguing about like who's going to get the bigger dressing room, you know, did you have any problems? I mean, August Burns Red, some of my best friends, I'm great dude. So I doubt you'd have those issues, but that is like the kind of thing that arises on co-headline tours that, you know, people like bands understand that, but a lot of fans that are listening to this probably don't really understand that it gets confusing when you're not sure who's headlining.
Yeah. And I think a lot of it has to do with experience too. I mean, I think bands like us and them, you guys, you know, we've been around for so long. We know how it goes every night.
Yeah.
We know that, you know, nobody's really that important, you know, when it comes down to it, you know? So I think I hate to be the band that like says we'd never really care, but we don't. Like when it's, as far as touring goes, we're not the kind of band that really cares about much. You know, we want all the bands to have fun. You know, we don't want to butt heads with bands and,
yeah,
you know, we've just always been that band. And if there is any sort of issue on another band's end, we just kind of make a joke out of it.
Right.
And just kind of make them feel like shit. So
that's right. Kill them with kindness a little bit. Yeah,
exactly.
Exactly. So. August Burns Red, great dudes. Some of my favorite people. So I guess with you guys and them, it was just like crazy parties every night, tons of drugs, women.
Yep. Yeah.
Right? Is that, does that the sound
usual.
About right? The usual?
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. Yeah.
Yep. No, but seriously, like you probably read some good books. Like what did you guys get up to?
Yeah. You know, went to bed at a decent hour, got up at a decent hour, the usual. I try, I, the last few years, I've actually started writing a lot on the road.
Oh, yeah? Yeah?
I mean, writing music for my solo stuff. And, I've really tried to use that time. And this tour, it's always tough. Like, we were off for a while, so it's always kind of hard for me to get back into it and get back in a routine. But about halfway through the tour, I really started diving in heavy and got a lot done. So
that's good.
Always my goal. That's always my goal on the side of touring, just because it's so boring. You know how it is. It's so boring, you know.
Right. Going
so
through
much sitting around.
Yeah. So yeah. Much sitting around. So yeah, I always have trouble, man, like being able to write on tour. I feel like the times I've written on tour, I haven't been as happy with what I've come up with. And
really?
I don't know if it's because part of my mind is like somewhere else, because, you know, you're always thinking, okay, there's a sound check, or there's like, you know, this, or a VIP, or there's some interview, or like there's always these things going on that are like sort of distracting. So if I find a time to write, like, okay, I'll have like an hour here to write. And then it's like, that's your window. And when it's over, it's over. And when I'm here at home, it's like, okay, I'm going to write for an hour. Well, if I'm super productive or I really feel good about what I'm writing, then I can be like, okay, I'll write for 2 hours. I'll write for 3 hours. I'll write like all fucking night, you know? So I have a big problem with that, but that's really good that you are able to do that.
Well, I was kind of, I have a son now. He's going to be four next week.
I was going to ask you about that. Oh, he's going to be four?
Yeah, he's going to be four next week. And, you know, that was a big reason why I started writing more on the road, you know, aside from the boredom. You know, I didn't have the freedom. I didn't have the freedom I had at home to write that I used to. And so I had to find time to make it happen. And I didn't want to just keep pushing him off when I'm home, because,
sure,
you know, I want to
spend
as much
time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that's kind of when I started doing it. Once I started it, it was very therapeutic to me. It helped me get through tour. You know, I think those that know me, you know, as a friend and, you know, my close-knit family or whatever, they all know that touring is not my favorite thing in the world. So, you know, that really helps me on the road, just mentally and kind of feel like I have some worth outside of, you know, the hour I'm on stage.
Right.
So, yeah. And as far as time management, yeah, that is tough some days, but, you know, we have a pretty open schedule, and I try, you know, I am the guy that is like, I don't want to do any interviews. I hate interviews.
Yeah.
which I'm doing one right now, but, you know, it's,
well, you reached out to me.
I know I did.
Right. I thought that was cool.
That was the reason though. I was like, yeah, well, this isn't, you know, he's doing a podcast with singers, which I think is cool. And you're on the other side as well.
Right.
You know how interviews are, you know. I don't know. It just gets to old doing what I call the Wikipedia interviews, when they just ask you the same questions that you can just literally find on Wikipedia or online. And it is, you know, I feel like it's a waste of time sometimes. And a lot of times I feel like they don't even know who you are or care. They're just doing it because they were told to do it and they want a few clicks on their site. I don't know. It just seems
I'm with you, man.
Very unpersonal, and it bothers me a lot of times.
Well,
so I try to push that out a little bit so I can be productive and write and, you know, hang around my friends and
there you go.
Not do Wikipedia interviews.
Yeah. I like that Wikipedia interview term. But what kills me about interviews is, like, it seems like people watch or read another interview and then they ask the same questions.
Yeah.
It's that already exists out there. So why are you asking the same question? You just, that was a good interview, so I want that to be my interview. It just doesn't make any sense. So, I'm with you. But so you say you don't like touring, and now I know you have a four-year-old, you live in California, you have a family. Mm-hmm. Is that making it even worse?
Yeah, it definitely does. I mean, I think that, you know, I've always – I guess since I was in my late 20s, I was just kind of – I always struggled with the boredom and just feeling like I'm wasting my time, I guess, when I'm not being productive on stage.
Yep.
But, it definitely got worse, you know, when I had my son. I just try to – you know, it's all about time management, just like any job. You know, you just got to find what works for you and your family. And, you know, I think I've gotten to a point where we have a pretty good thing going. You know, the band, I think we're all kind of in the same boat. Not, I'm the only one with a son, but I feel like just as we're older, we don't want to tour 9-10 months out of the year. Like
right,
we did
like you used to. Sure.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, everybody's kind of on the same page, and, you know, you just, you know, you, when you have five dudes in a band, you just have to make it work, and, you know, you have multiple families, so to speak. I have my home life and my work life, and you got to make them intertwine as best as they can.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. You're a very private person, you know, you don't put a lot out there. You know, like social media, like there's a few things of like videos of your son and, you know, and of your what? I assume it's your wife. I don't know.
Fiance.
Fiance.
Point, yeah.
Perfect.
Yep.
Yeah. So, yeah. And is that something that you're conscious about, or is that just the fact that like Tommy Rogers is just kind of a quiet dude?
Yeah,
that doesn't,
I mean,
you know, generally speaking, you just kind of like, you know, you're not like a dude partying, you're not like a crazy extrovert, right? So,
yeah.
You know, you have that personality. So is that, you know, is that what that is? Or do you really just not like the idea of mixing kind of your personal life with your, you know, professional life, I guess?
Well, I just think the public would be bored to tears if they were brought into how I am in real life. I don't know. I'm really normal. I mean, I hate to say that. I mean, it's just as far as living goes, I think mentally, when it comes to music, and my thought process is very different sometimes. But I don't know. I feel like the fans. Not that they don't want to see that, but I kind of like having my home life be for me and the people that I know. You know, I think social media, it's just weird how close everyone is. I mean, even people you don't know. And I mean, there's pros and cons, obviously, to everything. But I like having, you know, that separation. And I was really late on the social media thing. And as much as I like... was like, oh fuck social media, I don't need to do that shit, like I really regret, like on a business side of things, you know, that I didn't do it earlier, just because it is helpful to interact with fans and, you know, outside of the show and kind of and build that fan base that's your own personal fan base, which I think is very important.
Sure
But I don't know, I've kind of used those tools to kind of show to keep it about music.
Yeah.
You know, and throw my personal views and family life here and there, you know, randomly. But yeah, I've really noticed that, you know, our fans are really into music, and I love music, so I use those platforms to tell people what I'm listening to and just tell them what I'm like. You know?
I totally noticed that you do on like Twitter. You do like the pretty much like the daily album.
Yeah,
which is like, and I mean, for somebody, you know, I guess I think you're what, 35 now, is that right?
Yeah,
like for someone to be 35, been in, you know, the band for 15 years, put out all these albums, not to mention, and I want to get into like, you know, your solo stuff as well.
Mm-hmm.
For you to not be like burnt out on music is like kind of amazing. Because I'll be honest with you, like. There are days, like if let's say we're working on a record or we're on tour or whatever, there's days when the last thing I want to do is listen to music.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I know I'm not alone. Like a lot of people that have been doing it as long as we have feel that way. And I'm not saying like I hate music or whatever, but like there's just days when the last thing I'm going to go do is like, oh, I'm going to bust out that old Mew record. Like I saw you had Mew Fringers on, you know, on your like list. I'm like, oh, I love that record, you know? and like, no, but I'm saying like, there's just, it's amazing that you still, it's like all these things happen in your life and you're so busy writing all the time being, you know, being productive is important to you and you never get burned out on music. Like that is the love for music you have is very, very intense.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, because like you said, you're not alone. I mean, even guys in our band, you know, they'll go a whole tour without listening to music, which, I mean, for someone like me, that blows my mind because I try to listen, you know, like yesterday, I think I listened to like 3 or 4 records. But it's like, for me, like even like we talk about touring and being in a band, like my favorite part of being in a band is writing and recording, where a lot of people, like you go in the studio, that's what they dread. That's the part they don't like at all, where I'm the opposite. I would love to be in the studio every single day. I really embrace it. I love creating something from scratch. And And even when I record, you know, a lot of times I'll listen to music at, like when I'm driving afterwards, just to kind of, it's weird when I listen to music, I'm not listening to it as like, as trying to find influence. I'm listening to it as if it's comfortable to me.
Right.
You know, my brain is in downtime and I need just something to help with that. So, yeah, I mean, I think music's very important in my life and I think everyone's life, obviously, but yeah, I just, it doesn't bore me.
So your son's 4, has he showed interest in music like his dad?
Yeah, he loves, he's very interested in, you know, all the music that he's constantly surrounded by. You know, I'm always playing music and,
sure, yeah,
and so much different stuff, which I think is really cool. Just because I wasn't exposed to a lot of variety, you know, when I was young.
Oh, really?
And, yeah. I mean, I'm not really from a musical family. You know, nobody really played music. I mean, there was music played, you know, my dad always had the classic rock station on. So, I mean, I grew up with all that kind of ingrained in me, but I mean, as far as like putting on an album or anything at the house, that never really happened.
Yeah, man, it's so crazy you say that because like Between the Buried and Me is so diverse, like musically. Mm-hmm. I mean, especially the latest record, like, you know, I hate using the term like all over the place because that sounds like a bad thing. Because that's, you know, it sounds like I'm saying, oh, it's like a messy record or something.
We're like, whoa!
But it's not, you know? But at the same time, like your influences are so, such a wide range that when you said, oh, I wasn't exposed to like a lot of music. I mean, yeah. I guess like later in life, obviously you discovered all these different bands and stuff, but like, I don't know. I mean, your music not only has Between the Buried and Me, not only has, can I say BT Bam? Do you like BT Bam?
Yeah.
When people say BT Bam?
BT Bam's how I would say it.
Yeah.
Okay. I get weird when the like BTBAM, that just seems like.
Oh, when people say people actually say it like out like that.
Yeah,
B-T-B-A, yeah,
yeah. It's like it sounds like a robot.
When you came up with the band name, did you know that people were going to call it BT Bam for like ever? Like
no.
How long from when you named the band till people started saying that? And at first,
that's a
good
question.
Like, at first,
I have no
were
idea.
You like, this is the worst? Well, you know what I mean?
I knew, probably the first. You know, probably the first real record, you know, you kind of realize you're like, oh shit, our band name's really long. And it's a big pain in the ass when somebody's like, hey, what's your band called? And they have to ask you 3 times, what? It's Between what? So that always gets a little old. But as far as like you said, growing up on music, yeah, it all happened very late for me. And I think because we all, I don't know. I think the cool thing about our band is we all are influenced by a lot of different stuff, and we all listen to kind of different things from each other, and we all write very different from each other. Like, I could sit down and tell you if a part sounds like a Paul part or a Dan
right.
part, or you know.
Sure.
And I think that's what makes our music so unique, is just we all kind of have our own little thing going on, and when we get together, it just makes something cool to us, at least. And I don't know, I with music, I really, once I find something I like, I really dive in, and I've been like that probably since I was, you know, a young teenager. And I think that's why my influence is so diverse, and I listen to so much different stuff, is because when I'm like, oh, I like Bill Evans, that's some cool old jazz piano, then I really dive into that world and see what else is out there.
Right.
Or like, you know, so I'm like that with everything. Or if, you know, I hear one record by a band, I have to hear them all. You know, it may be a slight OCD thing, but yeah, I think that's kind of how a few of us are. And, you know, it just comes off all over the place.
Yeah. But in a good way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Another question I have for you guys too, like I mean, obviously I saw you guys play before you had a record out. I think we played here in,
I remember
in
that
Burlington.
Show,
yeah,
is,
it was. Oh, you
yeah.
remember the show in Burlington?
I do. It's weird because I have the worst memory on the planet. I couldn't tell you half the shows from last month, but I remember the old days. All those
yeah,
old shows
too.
I remember, and I remember that show, and I remember you guys, and I actually remember being like, damn, that dude can sing his ass off.
Well, I mean, that was the thing about you guys is like, I remember the show was, it was you guys. I think it was Every Time I Die, I think was headlining. Mm-hmm. There was like eight bands, and Silverstein played. You guys played. What was that band from? Another band from Buffalo. What were they called? Kid Gorgeous, I think.
Yeah.
They, you know, so it was like it was an awesome show, and there's a shitload of people. But I remember seeing your band and thinking like, you guys were like a hardcore band that had like Cannibal Corpse parts or something.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. But like, it was definitely you guys were a metal band, you know, or mm-hmm. a metalcore band, whatever the hell you want to call it, right? And you know, your first record was along those lines, and then you know, your second record, you branched it a little bit more. But my question for you is like, at what point were you just like, fuck it, we're gonna do whatever we want now? Because obviously there were probably some people that were like, what is this like weird progressive shit? Like, I just want to hear a breakdown.
Yeah. Well, I think it's weird because we kind of had that mentality from day one. Because Paul and I, we were in a metal band before called Prayer for Cleansing. And
yeah.
And when that ended and we started Between the Bear and Me, you know, when we sat down and talked about what we wanted to do, we're like, we want to be metal, but we want to not have any restraints. Like, we want to be able to have really, really mellow sections. And, you know, there's even a so-called jazz section on that first record. And,
right.
And, like, we just did it very subtly back then.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, like, we slowly did more and more, and we realized how much we enjoyed those moments.
Right.
I think our fans would kind of say Colors was when we went.
Yes, I would agree too.
You know, kind of all the way. I don't know. It's hard to analyze your own. It's kind of hard to analyze your own music. But the crazy thing is the cover record, which it's not my favorite thing we've ever done, but it was such a great moment for us to do that. And I think that record had a lot to do with Colors and just our confidence in doing other things.
Cool.
Because
yeah.
When we did do that, it was really rushed, which was kind of a problem, but we did so much different types of music in a short amount of time. And we kind of realized, we're like, hey, it's really fun playing this stuff. And I think we can kind of do it. So, and that was right before we started writing Colors. So I think that really gave us the confidence we needed to be like, step back, like do what you really need to do, like what excites you. And that's kind of our mentality. So I guess that was the beginning of that transition.
No, I think your cover record's great. I liked it when it came out, and I think I put on Black the other day. I love that. I love the cover of Black.
I think it was fun. It was just for me, like looking back, I'm totally not the kind of guy that looks back at old material and shoots down on it, because I think everything is there for a reason. You know, everything, you know, if you write genuine music, it should represent you at that moment when you wrote it and
or
as
covered
a person.
Covered it.
So when I look back at old stuff, I'm very proud of what we've done, and I really enjoy all our old material. But the only thing that bothers me about the cover record is I just wish we would have tweaked with the songs more, you know, rather than just
put your own spin on them a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
But I mean, come on, dude. Metallica and Justice for All. I mean, like, this is something people don't understand. Like, we're the age we are. You know, back when we were, you know, like 12, 13-year-old kids, that's like when I got into Metallica. It was like the biggest band in the world. And I probably listened to Injustice for All like 1,000 times, maybe more.
Oh,
you know?
Of course, yeah.
And how are you going to change that song? Do you know what I mean? What are you going to do?
Yeah.
Like, you've heard it.
I know.
It's so ingrained, you know?
Yeah.
It's not
like you're going to, you know, make it a swing version or
something.
No,
yeah, I think you put like a blast beat part or something in there that you know, maybe Lars couldn't quite pull off.
Yeah.
But no, man, I think that's cool. Do you still play old songs? Like, do you play anything from the first record or second record?
We try to here and there. Yeah, we this last tour we played a song off the first record actually, and nothing off this. I hate even saying it. It's such a bad title. Chevenel Cut a Flip.
I don't shoot down my old stuff, but I won't even tell you what the song's called.
Yeah. It's funny because the first night we played it, I said the song title and I was like, ooh, I don't. And that was the only time I ever said it. So the rest of the tour, I was like, this song's from 2001.
This is an old one. Yeah, that's funny. But yeah, man, like, I don't know. We're the same way, too. In Silverstein, like, we always play old stuff, you know, and we try to mix up which old stuff we play, too. Because, the diehards that come out every tour, every show, you know, we want to play the same songs, you know?
Oh, yeah, I agree. See, the problem with us is we have very demanding fans, as I'm sure you do. And you know, certain people, our songs are so long, so we have a very short.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we can only grab a certain amount of songs for the set, and as we've gotten older, we've gotten very picky about the flow of the set. You know, we kind of treat our set as like we would an album, and unfortunately, even this last tour, I mean, honestly, I didn't think the set felt really good, but not. I will say because of the old songs, but not because I don't like those songs. They just felt really weird in places.
Yeah.
And I think because our material has changed so much, a lot of times it's really hard to keep that flow and have it sound like it's supposed to be there. Even though it is the same band, it's just such a – yeah, because the first half of the tour, we were playing that song and then right after it, a song from the new record. So it literally felt like a time jump, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, and it sounded like one. So it's tough for us. And, you know, a lot of times because we say that, our fans think of it as like, oh, they hate their old stuff. They don't want to play it. That's not really the case. It's just that it's really tough to make it work and keep the set cool. And honestly, like when we do play really old stuff, I don't think we have a lot of those from 2001 fans still.
Yeah.
You know? They quit moshing. Once we quit doing the breakdowns, they were out.
Do you think August Burns Red had a younger fan base than you guys, or do you think it's kind of the same? Oh, definitely younger. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's good for you guys though, right? To get in front of those people.
Yeah, that's why we did it. So a lot of people looking at us like, "What the fuck is going on?" You know. But
yeah, I'm sure there's some head scratching moments, but at the same time, you're giving people something that they haven't seen before too. You know.
Yeah.
Which is. I mean, just as in terms of being an artist and expressing yourself, I think that's kind of an important thing.
Yeah, that and like I was saying earlier, when I really like to dive into music, I hope that there's some of those fans every night that it's like, okay, this not to talk down on August Burns Red, but you know, there's a fan that has only heard that band or a few bands like that, and they're like, oh, well, this is a little different. Maybe I'll kind of dive into some other kinds of music and see what else is out there, and that's what I hope for.
Absolutely.
You know, and that's why I do the daily album. You know, I hope these – because I loved that when I was a kid. It was different then. You know, you didn't have the internet. You would get, you know, a sampler of a record label or something. And
right.
Like, you know, you'd find bands that way.
Life Force Records.
Yeah, Life Force Records. Or you'd see your favorite singer with a cool T-shirt on and check out that band. But I just think it's important to, you know, hopefully get some new fans and have them kind of – have a new moment in their life for music and try to explore some new things.
Absolutely. How does your voice hold up on tour? I mean, what you do with your voice, singing, screaming is pretty insane.
It really depends on the set. And it depends on, I can't get sick. It's a nightmare. I mean, as you know, it's just, it's some singers, it doesn't really affect them much, but me, it really does because I always get throat stuff if I do get sick, which is a pain in the ass. But I've only really lost my voice one time, and it was a few years ago, and it freaked me out, honestly. It really
– Oh, yeah. Like it was like – like you felt like it was never coming back or never going to be the same?
It really like beat me down and made me feel – I kind of have some confidence issues anyway, and it really kind of got to me. Even though it wasn't my fault, I felt like it was. You know, I like blame myself.
Well, it makes you feel
your voice should never go out. You know.
Yeah. Well, it makes you feel kind of like worthless. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it's like you have one job, you know, to get up there and put on a show and use your voice. And when you can't do that, you know, it's And I mean, I feel like I get sick like just about every other tour at some point. Something, you know, and I think it's funny now, like. And I don't want to get too like technical into this stuff, but it's like, you know, when your voice is like normal or like, mm-hmm. you know, you haven't been on the road for a while and you kind of sing and it's just like, it sort of comes out all easy. But then once you're on the road or whatever, after like a week, it's like, for me, there like becomes this like sort of tightness where I almost have to make like an adjustment on the way that I sing.
Yeah.
And I don't know if this is just me or if this is something everybody goes through. And then there's like a third adjustment that I'll go through if I'm sick, to where like I've been sick with the same kind of colds and stuff so many times that I almost just know how to get through it, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think that's definitely all true. I think I deal with that as well. I mean, you get – I mean, I think things like lack of sleep or just playing a lot of shows in a row. I mean, and not to be like, I'm the old guy. But, I mean, when you're older – you know, it's tougher to play 12 shows in a row. I mean, I used to be able to do 20, 30 in a row, you know, but not anymore. You know, it's like,
what do you tell the agent to cut it off at? How many in a row do you want to do?
We honestly kind of always forget about that, but they kind of naturally do. I mean, no more than a week normally.
Yeah. Like six,
five,
or
six
something.
Shows. Yeah. But we do forget to always talk about that because we'll be in the middle of a tour. We're like, what? There's 10 shows in a row? Like, oh, we keep forgetting to talk about that. But
yeah, it's so
but
true.
But yeah, man. I mean, I have a, you know, when once we started doing like hour and a half sets a lot of times on our headlining, you know, you just, it's weird. You feel your voice is like your chords are sore.
Sure.
And it's just, like you said, you have to adjust and then. We've all been sick so many times, you kind of have your way to get through it and your ways to make it work, except that one time I couldn't make it work, which was – it was literally the worst. I mean, it was
did you try?
So embarrassing.
Did you try? You tried to play.
I did the whole show. You know, yeah. I always try to do that. I hate to be like the, oh, I can't play tonight thing, but, yeah, I literally couldn't hit a note. And it was so – like, I have a problem with when I get embarrassed – I want to smash things. So the whole show was me holding back, just wanting to literally just annihilate everything. It was so tough for me. And luckily it was, I had my fiance was there and I was actually out east in North Carolina. So I had family there. So I had some support that night.
Did you say it was like a hometown show too?
It was. Yeah.
Oh, that's even worse.
Yeah. So there was that pressure and we had a DVD shoot 2 days after that we had to cancel and reschedule.
So there was a live DVD?
Yeah, it was for the Parallax thing we did, where we did like live in studio thing, which we had to, you know, reschedule because I don't even remember what was wrong, but the doctor said I shouldn't sing for a month, but I ended up doing it 2 weeks later. But yeah, it was tough, man. But I mean, everybody goes through it though, and it's just part of it. Especially, yeah. I mean, I guess I'm lucky for 15 years and having one
show. Yeah,
yeah. So
no, that is like. Do you have any sort of like technical training, like vocally?
No, I did see Melissa Cross one time.
I did too.
You did? Yeah. I went just to. I was kind of more out of curiosity of how everything works. Because you might have been the same way. I mean, growing
exactly,
up,
man. Yeah,
learning to sing was literally just you and your friends are jamming, and you just kind of figure it out.
Yep.
You know, there was never, you know, there wasn't YouTube of like somebody telling me how to do it or helping me with it. So you just do it, and so I kind of, it's just been this huge learning process for me, and it still is. And I think that's what's exciting about singing is I'm still every year I feel like I learn something new, and you know, I wanted to go and kind of understand some technical things, and it was cool. There was nothing that like blew my mind or like, oh, I never even thought about that. But it kind of helped me kind of understand some things a little bit. And but aside from that, no. You know, there are moments where I think about possibly looking into it, but I don't know. I feel like my vocal style is kind of unique. It would be hard. I don't know what I need, what I want. As far as training goes, you know,
absolutely, yeah, no, you know, I saw Melissa Cross too, and I had almost exactly the same experience. I was kind of curious, thought maybe I could learn something that would blow my mind, and didn't. But yeah. I do, you know, I do still do like some of her warm ups and stuff, like to this day.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah, it's a very, it's very compact and easy, which I'm really into. I like minimal, you know, time. To get something done, and you know, as far as a warm up, I want it to be quick and still feel productive at the same time.
How long do you warm up for?
A lot of her stuff. About about 10 to 12 minutes.
Okay.
What for vocals, and then I do, you know, the stretching and all that. And I'm real into, I try, if we're in the States and we're on a bus, I really like to just chill by myself, honestly, and stretch and relax. And as Depeche Mode says, enjoy the silence, you know?
Yeah. So. Yeah. I love Depeche Mode, man.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, you did a Depeche Mode cover on that record, didn't you?
Yeah, we did. Yeah, Little 15. That was one that we kind of mixed up a little bit. That song I thought came out cool.
Cool, cool, very cool. So how's California, man? Do you like it out there better than North Carolina?
I love it, man. It just feels right to me. And, you know, and my family's out here. That's why I came out here. And you know, when you tour and you experience literally all the miserable weather the world has to offer, it's nice to have a place that's always nice when you come home.
Yeah, I know.
So I know. I don't like the price of living out here, but
no. Are you still vegan?
I am.
There you go. Well, California, yeah. That's like the vegan mecca.
Yeah.
Come on.
It makes you I don't even get excited anymore. It makes me spoiled.
Oh yeah, like you like veggie grill, it's like the most amazing thing you've ever eaten.
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh yeah, it's okay, I guess.
Yeah.
Are you raising your son vegan or vegetarian?
No, he's eating it all.
Okay.
Except he's a picky prick and he doesn't eat anything.
Is your fiance your fiance is a meat eater?
Yes. She,
yeah. Is that at all like was that like an argument at all for you guys? Or were
no,
you, you're cool
not
with
at
it?
All. Yeah, I'm a strong believer in just letting things flow. And with him, you know, I don't want to like talk down on anybody raising their kids vegan because I think it's awesome, but I didn't want him to be that kid that couldn't like join in at school or,
right?
You know, I want to let him experience it all, and then he can make his decisions when he gets older. You know, and I know it's a cop out, but it's easier as well, and especially when he's on the road with me, and you know when we travel, it's a lot easier. It's,
yeah,
when you're in fucking middle of nowhere Texas to find food for him.
that's true man. No, I that's funny. Like, again, I'm a vegetarian. I have been for a very long time, but I don't have any kids, so I haven't thought about that really. But it's always, I'm sure it's something that, you know, people debate and talk about. You know, if you're a vegetarian, do you need to, like, is it like, are you a hypocrite if you're, you know what I mean? I don't know.
I mean, I'm sure it goes by, you know, it depends on the person. I'm sure some people think it is hypocritical. But the thing about veganism and all that, it's for me, it's always been so very personal. You know, I've never, I don't know, I look at it like religion. You know, I've always been very against religion, you know, most of my life. And I feel like, not because of what it stands for. I think what it stands for is amazing. I think just the pressure it puts on people and the whole idea that we should all think that's the same bothers me. So I think because of that, you know, when it comes to veganism, I'm like, oh, it's for me. If you don't want to do it, that's fine. You know, I don't want anybody to ever think like they have to do something because that's how I do it. Or I look down on them because they don't live the same way I live, you know?
Absolutely, man. You're a live and let live kind of dude.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So I have to ask you about this because, you know, you guys are on Victory Records.
Oh, here we go.
For, well, come on. What am I going to not talk? Like, the giant elephant in the room. We got to talk about this, man.
We're some of the few that made it through.
We made it.
We made it. We all stuck together. And
and we're still here. We still have careers somehow. We got through it. And, yeah, like, I mean, I don't know how you guys have been in terms of, like, publicly talking about Victory or, like, you know, your experience, good or bad, and if you want to talk about it. But I'd love to hear any stories about working with Tony Brummel that you may have.
Well, me and Tony actually got along really well.
Oh, I get along. I still get along with Tony. Tony came out to one of our shows, 10-year anniversary show.
So you still keep in contact with him?
Well, a little bit, you know. Like like I said, we invited him out for our 10-year tour, which was a little over a year ago. He came out with Delphine and partied, you know, as Tony does.
Yeah.
So we still, you know, and we email and sometimes and they still we still get like we get vinyl and stuff from them, you know. So we still have a bit of a relationship with like Clint and stuff, but Yeah, but anyways, this isn't about me. I want to know about you.
Well, your situation is very different from ours, which is weird because Tony and I did get along so well. But basically, when we didn't want to sign again, I mean,
you guys completed yeah. your deal.
We did. And a few things happened. I don't need to talk about everything, but yeah, he basically, you know, wants nothing to do with us, and I guess vice versa. But yeah, I mean, little things like, I mean, trying to get our records or vinyl for tour that has not happened and probably will not happen. Yeah, it's been weird, man, because it's not like for me, I have no hard feelings because I understand things don't work out, and in that whole situation for me, it was just a learning experience. I'm sure you guys are in the same situation. You were young, you didn't have a lot of experience. I mean, when we all started, especially back then, like none of us knew anything about the business.
We didn't even have a manager.
Exactly. We never had a manager till like Colors, and right. It's just one of those things. You didn't know anything. You were just kids that never thought you would really tour. I mean, there was no such thing as money back then as in this style of music.
Yeah.
So we just, you know, we just kind of signed our life away for however many records, and it sucks, but you know, we've kind of tried to just not dwell on it. I don't know. The thing that bums me out is not being able to get vinyl and CDs and stuff like that, you know?
Yeah, no, I mean, you should hit up Clint, man. He, you know.
I have.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. No, Clint and I, we've talked a little bit, you know. I don't want to sit here and just bash.
No, I'm not asking you to. I just, you know, I mean, a lot of, like, this isn't a secret. Like, people know a lot of bands have had, you know, shared their grievances about Victory. And, mm-hmm. you know, I've been pretty positive about what I've said. Like, we had definitely had some issues. A lot of things were hard and a headache, mm-hmm. you know, and there were days when I wished we were on any other label, but then at the same time, they knew how to sell records. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they, you know, they were able to get our records into kids' hands, you know?
Yeah.
And that was,
I think that's the important thing is trying to think about, like, step outside of the business bullshit that we all got completely screwed on, but like the fact that there are a few positives out of it. That one being what you said, like our music got to a lot of people. Two, we had 100% creative control.
That's right.
You know,
you
know, as far as our writing, they never questioned what we were doing. They never asked to even hear what we were doing. And you know, it could have been worse. We could have had somebody knocking down our door telling us to change our music.
Right. We need a 3.5 minute between the bird and the radio track.
I mean,
yeah.
You know, that never happens. So, I mean, you know, as far as art and everything, we're always very hands-on. And so there are pros. I mean, there are probably more cons than pros, but you know, I feel like, you know, it's so long ago. Oh, yeah. Just try to think about the positives, you know?
Yeah. Well, Stephanie Marlowe was like the best. So
yeah. Yeah.
And I remember her being like, she was like your champion, you know, over there. I remember.
Yeah.
So did you talk to her anymore?
Not in a very, very long time.
She came out to our show in Chicago. She's the best.
Yeah. I hear she's doing publicity.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah. She is. Yeah. She is still, you know, still in the game.
It's awesome.
So I want to talk a little bit about your solo stuff, and I'm not talking mm-hmm. about the Giles record that came out on Victory. the Thomas Giles stuff, which is mm-hmm. awesome. I really like it, and it's, you know, obviously it's very different from Between the Buried mm-hmm. and Me, because there's not much metal influence, I guess.
Yeah.
Now, how did that come about? What was really like the motivation for starting that project?
Well, I think any musician, when you write a lot, you write a lot of different kinds of music, and you know, sometimes a different outlet or a different way you write is very helpful.
Sure.
And for me, with the solo stuff, it's a totally different process. Between the Bear and Me is so, there's so much work that goes into it. It's so intricate. There's so many working parts. I wanted to really strip down everything and write some songs off you know, a few riffs, like some simple rock songs. And that was kind of, that was kind of the idea behind it. And, you know, I had, when I started writing it, I had a lot of material already written, and I never even told anyone about it. I was just kind of like, well, I'm going to write a record and see if it is even good. And if it is good, I'll announce to the world that I'm going to do it and, you know, put it out.
Okay.
So that was kind of how I did it. And then once I wrote everything, I was happy with it. And, you know, I was like, okay, this is something I want to do then. And I really, really enjoy writing the music. Because it's so different for me, and it's kind of I learned a lot from it. Since this is a vocal podcast, I learned so much about my voice doing it, just because it wasn't heavy. And there was, it kind of helped my confidence in the more melodic sense of singing. And
do you actually struggle with confidence in your melodic singing? Is that actually something that you feel is like, you feel
yes.
like you're just more of a screamer
yes.
than a singer?
I definitely struggle with it. You know, there's moments where I'm very confident.
On the first record, your old drummer did a lot of singing, right?
Yeah. Well, I didn't grow up singing. I grew up, you know, I was a hardcore kid, a metal
yeah.
kid.
Yeah.
You know, so I grew up playing guitar. And then when I started screaming in bands, I just kind of figured out, like we were saying earlier, and I always enjoyed singing, but I never really knew anything about it or even knew if I could do it. So once we started kind of incorporating the more melodic moments into the music, it was really a learning process for me.
Sure.
And like I was saying, it still really is. And I think doing different things musically, like with the solo stuff, really helped me learn a lot with the band, because we do, you know, change quite frequently as from release to release. I learn a lot. I mean, this last record, I learned so much. With vocals, just because it was so different. I took a completely different approach to my writing, and that really helped me kind of just learn more about myself. I guess I really enjoy being uncomfortable.
Okay.
Just
by definition of the word uncomfortable is almost like, you know, I totally get what you're saying. It's just a funny,
funny
phrase.
I mean,
yeah.
After doing music for as long as, you know, we have, I feel like,
you're comfortable being uncomfortable.
Yeah, well, you get caught up in kind of being set in your ways. And it's like, this is how you write. This is this kind of part you're going to do this kind of vocals over.
Yes.
And I feel like the more I step outside of that, the more I end up liking it in the long run. A lot of times it's a lot more stress, and it's a more work, but I really enjoy it. And, you know, the solo stuff was like that for me. I did a score a few years ago for a movie, and I was totally outside of my element.
Yeah,
I didn't have a clue how to do it. And because I was so uncomfortable and so, you know, scared about what I was doing, I loved it because it was so different for me. And I felt like the music I wrote was very different for me. And all those little moments, I think, just kind of help everything you do. Like,
yeah,
you know, I feel
absolutely.
Like it really helps between the Bear and Me and what I do with that, with the band. And I think it helps for writing solo stuff as well.
Have you done any solo shows? A tour?
No, I did 5 shows right after the first record. So that was a while ago.
Did you do it just yourself, or did you have some guys?
I had a band. You probably know Josh from Hope's Fall.
Yeah, of
bass.
Of course.
Will, our first drummer.
Yeah.
Will
which
he played on my
He
played on my drums on my last solo record.
Cool. Yeah.
Well.
I remember the One Amazing Kid thing he had too back in the day.
Yeah. Yeah. So he's, you know, I love playing with him. And Paul, our guitarist, BT Bam guitarist, he played with me.
Oh, cool. Well, that's really awesome. You have the support, you know, for your project, and you kind of keep it in the family.
Yeah, so that was fun. I you know, playing shows was cool. It was really stressful for me, just because I was like the headliner. I'd never played shows. They were really small shows. All the finances and everything, you know, as far as money goes, was out of my personal pocket. So there was
sure.
a lot of personal stress behind that.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I didn't like that at all. So I don't know if that's why I haven't done it again, but I've been kind of aching to do it.
Yeah.
So who knows?
I ask you for selfish reasons, because I just started a solo thing on my own.
Cool.
Yeah, it's called River Oaks. It's like way. I mean, your stuff is a lot more I mean, well, obviously you're like, I don't want to say you're a better musician than me, but you're a different musician than me.
Different, yeah.
So, you know, so your stuff is obviously a lot more complex and intense. My stuff's like, I'm trying to write like stripped down 3.5 minute, you
cool.
know, great songs. That's more yeah. what I enjoy doing. But yeah, but I ask you about these kind of logistical things because that's kind of where I'm at, where I put out 3 songs and now I'm wondering, you know, do I get a band? Do I do some stuff like just yeah. acoustic guitar, you know? So I'm just, yeah. that's why I'm asking you. But
it's tough because, you know, when you're in a successful band, you have, I mean, even if you don't think you have it, you have expectations.
Oh yeah.
You know, when yeah. you're used to playing, you know, these legit shows, you have legit lights, legit sound, you know, you travel, you know, pretty comfortably. Yeah.
yeah.
And then going back, I mean, some people really enjoy going back to the, you know, to the van and, you know, doing, but I don't at all.
Well, yeah. I mean, there's a certain amount of like nostalgia that I'm mm-hmm. kind of excites me about yeah. rolling in. Like, you know, I remember, same with you guys. Remember when we played the abandoned furniture warehouse in Windsor?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, remember that? Like, going yep. into a place like that. Oh, and by the way, for people listening, that was not just a clever name. It was literally an abandoned
literally,
furniture
yeah.
warehouse. That was not the, that was the name of the venue, and it was what it was. but, like, I kind of miss those days, man. Like for yeah. me to go, like, shit, like, put some gear in the back of my car and drive and load in and play a show and play on the floor. Like, to me, maybe it's just nostalgia, but I would kind of embrace that and
yeah,
be
see,
able to
I
do
miss,
that again.
There's certain things I miss and there's certain things I don't. Like the playing aspect of it, I really miss the plug and play aspect. Like, you just get up there, you plug in your shit, you know, it sounds like hell, but you get through it.
Yep.
I kind of miss that because now everything, you know, we have so much going on. It's like we have in-ears, we have, you know, we play to a click, you know, there's all these things and everything's so spot on and so professional, which is, it obviously needs to be, but I kind of miss the plug and play aspect of the old days.
Yeah.
And even those totally. Venues that, you know, it was cool to just pull up and play on the floor somewhere, but I don't miss the sleeping on random people's filthy floors and, you know, eating the worst food known to man and, you know, not sleeping for a month
Taco
at a
Bell
time.
3 times a day.
Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
But, you know, on the musical side of things, there are some things I miss. But, yeah, it's just tough with solo stuff because of those expectations. And, you know, when you're older, you know, you have to work your financial obligation. You know, we're all men now that have bills and lives, and it's tough to go out on your own dime and come home and not make any money.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, and when you have a band with, yeah, and when you have a band with you, you know, I hate to be that guy that like is like, hey man, you want to play with me pro bono? Like that's just, you know, if you're working, I feel like you should be paid. So I want to be able to pay.
Yeah.
Some people that are playing with me, but if there's no money to be paid, it's kind of tough. So there's all those things.
You're playing for free, and we got to sleep on some dirty floor. Does that sound yeah. fun, man? Come along.
And yeah, even though we did it over a decade ago, you want to do it again?
Yeah. Well, but, hey, some people like want. Like I was literally just talking to Josh, our guitar player, about that.
Yeah.
He's like, we should do like a house show, like a house, a tour of house shows. I'm like, yeah. Hell no.
Like, yeah, it really depends on the person. I mean, our bass player, Dan, he's the same way. He would love to do that.
Right. Like,
you know, and I think it's awesome. I think it's great. You know, he's got some side stuff too. And he's one of those people that embraces like getting in the van and going on tour. And I think that's awesome. I think it's great. But I'm a very honest person, and that does not sound awesome.
Yeah,
to me.
The last time we slept on a kid's floor, a bat landed on my face while I was sleeping.
There you go.
Yeah, if anyone wants to hear that story, I think it's episode 3 of the podcast. I tell the story, episode 3. But do you have any stories about staying at like kids' houses back in the day? Any crazy shit?
Oh, the weirdest thing, because we've never been a party band. I mean, you know, we've never been the band that does anything crazy. We've always been kind of the jokesters, but we're, you know, we just hang out. And I felt like back in the day, whenever you stayed at kids' house, and they always interpreted that as, hey, let's invite all 40 of our friends over because this band wants to party.
Yep.
You know, which was always ended up just being a bunch of people sitting around drinking and us laying out sleeping bags trying to sleep underneath them.
Yeah.
But I don't know. There was a lot of instances. I mean, actually, at J-Cloth in Guelph, one of his roommates came in and just – I think he was in his underwear and just came in and thought – I was sleeping on the couch, and he thought that was the stairs. So he just started stepping on me over and over in the middle of the night. And I think Paul and I almost got in a fight with him, but we realized he was – I don't know if he was on drugs or if he was – asleep.
I'd say
whatever,
there's a good chance.
Yeah. So, but I mean, there. God, I mean, as far as story, I mean, there was always. I remember we stayed with a guy that literally had. It was always in the hood. I don't know why, but back then I feel like every place you played and every place you stayed was in the most seedy part of town.
Yeah.
And I remember we stayed with a guy, and we were starving, so we ate ramen, which was very common back then. And he had one bowl and one fork. And one pot. So we all took turns making ramen and just eating out of the one bowl and one fork. And but yeah, I don't know. There was a lot of so much dirty, like filthy, like cats shitting on you and just weird.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Very weird.
But yeah, so I'm glad I experienced all that. You know, like I said earlier, I remember those shows. They were fun. There was a lot of stories.
There was, yeah.
Where now it's like, you know, you get those normal interviews we're talking about, and they're like, tell us a crazy story. It's
right.
Like, man, I mean, my day-to-day is so boring on tour. There's not – unless something just horrible happens, there's no stories.
Right, like your bus catching on fire.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Which happened to us.
There
which,
you go. Well, now you have a story. Now you have something to tell
exactly.
People. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, but I do want to, like, one more thing about the solo stuff. Like, we haven't really talked about lyrics,
mm-hmm.
And I know I've already had you for about an hour now, but lyrically, like, you know, with your solo album, is that more personal? Whereas
I am a lot more personal with the solo stuff.
Because I know Between the Buried and Me, you're writing, like, concept records, and you're telling, like, stories,
yeah,
which I'm sure there's elements of that that's personal to you. But it
very
seems
yeah.
less personal than the solo stuff.
Yeah. I mean, once we started, I guess, like you said, you know, when the Colors era started, you know, our music kind of called for a more adventurous storytelling vibe, I guess,
yeah.
for the lyrics. And I really, once I started doing it, I really enjoyed it. But yeah, with the solo stuff, it is nice to kind of get some personal things. You know, there's a lot of stuff for my son, especially this last record that I wrote. And, you know, little things like that. And a lot of it is very personal, even though it's not outwardly personal. I would say a lot of my lyrics are very abstract and kind of hard to follow sometimes, but I kind of understand, like, what the purpose is and why it's very personal to me.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's – but, I mean, it really depends. Like, right now I'm finishing up a third record.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
When's it going to come out?
I don't know yet. I'm hoping – I haven't really talked about it yet.
Okay.
So it's very different. It's more on the electronic side of things.
Yeah.
But it's very moody and mellow, and my vocal approach for that record has been very different. I've kind of treated it as I would music, kind of just write what comes to mind and what happens in the moment, kind of like – almost improv lyric writing, but not really having like. Normally, I'll be like, "Okay, this song's about this," but with this stuff, I've kind of just started from scratch, not even really thinking about what I want the song to be about, and kind of go from there.
When you
which
write,
has been weird, but been it, it's been fun.
When you write lyrics, are you like, do you pour over it? Are you like, do you take a long time to write lyrics, or are you kind of like idea, and you're pretty quick? Because
it's very different for what I'm doing. For solo stuff, I write pretty quick. I kind of just – normally I sit down and I write – you know, I kind of figure out melodies and kind of write lyrics as I'm writing melodies. And I have a basic idea of what I want the song to be about, and that's kind of it. With the band, it's a whole lot of because
the music must come first, you know, so much more,
yes.
Right? You can't go.
Yeah, the music always comes first. And, you know, with us, with the concept records, it's a lot of planning, a lot of outlining. I do a lot of work before I even write a word. I basically kind of get a basic outline of the record, where I want certain things to happen and, you know, not happen on the record, and kind of get all that planned out before I even start writing, and then go from there. In the past, I would just write a whole lot and then tweak it later. Like, I would sit down on my laptop or a pen and paper and just write a shitload and not look at it for a few days and come back to it.
Cool.
And kind of tweak
it. That's a good approach. Yeah.
Yeah. Which really worked well in our older style of music. But now with the last record, I kind of did how I do solo stuff. I kind of sat down and wrote lyrics as I was writing vocal melodies and stuff. But I had all the outlines of kind of where I want things to go beforehand.
Yeah.
So just a lot of tweaking and back and forth of kind of where I want things to go.
Do you write vocal melodies just like in your head? Like, do you just kind of hum them, or do you actually use an instrument?
It depends. I really try to do like what comes to mind first. I feel that like that's important. I always try to go there first, like what just instantly jumps out at me.
Yeah.
And go from there. And if that really works, then I normally do stick with just humming and whatever comes. But a lot of times if a part gives me trouble, I'll either like learn it on guitar and be like, okay, take a different approach. Like, okay, even though this part is heavy, these are the chords, let's pretend it's an acoustic song. How would I sing over it if it was an acoustic song?
Yeah, that's something that I do big time. I know all my melodies pretty much on a guitar. Like, I pretty much know. And then I know if it's in my range too and stuff like that, you know? But I just always like to ask people how they approach it, you know?
See, I need to be better at that, because I'll write crazy shit and I'm like, oh, that's really hard for me to do. I need to be a bit better about like staying within my range. And then certain parts, like a lot of our stuff gets really complicated and
I can't even imagine, which
frustrates me. And I'll get, you know, either with Dan or Paul, and we'll kind of sit down and I'll be like, well, here's what I want to do, but some notes aren't working that well. I need to really have you dissect, you know, the riff with me so I can kind of make it work. And so that's happened a few times in the past. Man. So it really, really depends on the part and the song.
I just like, how long do you guys take tracking a record? Like, how long did the last record take to track?
Tracking doesn't take us that long.
No, I guess you guys
three
are
weeks.
Like, Paul's insane. Like, I mean, on guitar.
Yeah,
recording
for, well, we record the whole record ourselves before.
Oh, you do? Oh,
real.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
So we do, so we have a literally 100% everything done as far as the layout of the record and how it's gonna sound. So so when we actually start recording, it's very easy, honestly. Like, I feel like the last few records, we just have it down to a science for us. And it's even got to the point now where we don't even have to, like, I can not show up and I know stuff will get done, and
right.
vice versa.
Yeah,
you know,
they'll just
leave me. Yeah, nobody's like that. It's awesome. We just kind of, we're like, all right, this is your day. We know you're going to be awesome. Like, I feel like we have the confidence that we know each other well enough that, you know, we don't have to look over each other's shoulders. Like, I know Blake's going to fucking be awesome. I know, you know, all of them, Dan, Paul, and Dustin, you know, it's going to be great every time. So I think that's a great feeling. Just because it makes it less stressful, and you can worry about stressing out about your own shit rather than stressing about your own shit and the other members.
Right. That makes sense. That makes sense. That's a beautiful thing. Well, thanks, man. What do you guys got going on next?
We're doing some Europe touring in a few months, and we're doing some random US fests.
Okay.
Which will probably be very awkward. We're playing with a bunch of like bro rock bands.
yeah, it could be awkward.
So
like
we'll,
theory
we'll
of a dead man or something like that. Is
yeah,
it, is
yeah.
It?
I mean, like total. I mean, not in our world at all.
Yeah,
so we'll see how that goes. But I'm recording next week to hopefully finish up a record.
A Thomas Giles record?
Yeah, yeah. So hopefully that will be done soon. And I've already started a fourth, so I'm excited about that. And then we haven't started writing any new Between the Bear and Me stuff. But hopefully, I don't know, once we finish touring, you know, we have some U.S. stuff later in the year. We haven't announced yet. So
cool. Good.
Yeah, a lot of stuff on the horizon.
Well, it's awesome to hear you're doing so well, and you're out in California
too,
and
your
family, and the band's doing well, and you guys are getting along. It's just like, it seems like just your life is just perfect.
Everything's good,
man. Is your life perfect?
I mean, in the grand scheme, yeah, it is. I mean, obviously, there's things that suck here and there, but when you really sit down, those things aren't bad.
Absolutely, man. Well, it's really, really nice to talk to you. Thanks for taking the
time. Yeah, you too, man.
Yeah, appreciate it, man. Okay, well, you have a great day, and I hope to see you around, maybe at a weird bro fest.
Yeah, man, there you go.
Yeah, bro band fest, exactly.
All right, well, take care and tell the guys I said hello.
I absolutely will, Tommy.
All right, thanks again, man.
Okay, take care.
All right, bye.
See ya. So there is my conversation with Thomas Giles Rogers of Between the Buried and Me, BT Bam, and great talking to him, great dude, one of my oldest friends, you know, in music. So I'm really happy he reached out to me and we were able to jump on the phone and do this, and hope to have him back at another point. And really, if you haven't seen Between the Buried and Me, you probably need to get on that. They're one of the most talented bands. I mean, I don't want to say of all time because that sounds a little like crazy, but in terms of like the scene, you know, what we do, they are a head and shoulders above everybody else. So make sure you check them out. The intro, I played, you know, a medley kind of thing, which was Mordecai from, I believe, their record Silent Circus, one of their older jams. So if you like that technical metal stuff, definitely check out Between the Buried and Me. However, I'm going to leave you with a Thomas Giles Rogers song. He goes by Thomas Giles. So Google Thomas Giles, and this is one of his solo songs called Hypoxia. So check it out. In some ways, it's very un-Between the Buried and Me, but it's still great music by a great artist and a great guy. So here it is, Hypoxia by Thomas Giles on Lead Singer Syndrome. And make sure you check out Between the Buried and Me as well. And we'll see you next week. This is Shane. Peace and love. Take care.
There's no looking down here.